Leprechaun Lunch with Sean and Sharpley.
Oh, yeah!
On 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader.
What is this?
We're talking Notre Dame football, the NFL, the Cubs, and more.
Oh, yeah, I like this idea.
The Leprechaun Lunch.
Pretty good. Pretty good.
With Sean Stiers.
All you do is drip.
I have to dribble. If I give it to you, you just shoot.
And Evan Sharpley.
You're a chucker. You chuck?
If it's happening in sports.
Fumble!
We're talking about it.
Flag on the play.
Now your hosts.
Woo!
Sean Stiers and former Irish quarterback.
Hi.
Evan Sharpley.
Coming to you live from Five Star Dive Bar in downtown Elkhart. Glad to have you with us today for the next hour, Sean and Sharpley and the Leprechaun Lunch on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. I feel like I'm sitting next to Aaron Rodgers' evil twin.
Yeah, maybe.
You came in.
Or Gardner Mania is taking off right now.
Maybe that's it. Gardner Minshew. Yeah, that's right. Evan Sharpley with the fresh mustache. You said you were just shaving it this morning. Did you have it goatee or did you have it beard before this?
It was a thick beard because I didn't see you last week.
No, you didn't.
I got in a haircut, but the beard was still there, and it was time for it to go, and I got to the point that, you know, most men with beards, I'm sure, get to. They shave everything but the mustache. They
right.
Look at it maybe for a second. They're like, well, what if I just kept that for a little while?
Why not?
So I've given myself 24 hours. The countdown already started,
though. All right. Yeah. It's looking pretty sharp, though. That looks like the...
Yeah, you didn't know that Tom Selleck was going to be on the show today, did you?
That's right. Take your pick. Aaron Rodgers, Gardner Minshew, Tom Selleck.
Evan Sharpley.
And of the above. That's right. That's absolutely right. Well, I want to remind you a couple things regarding Five Star Dive Bar before we jump into the show. Lunch special today, and they are open every day at 11 a.m. for lunch. Lunch special, Buffalo Fried Chicken, Mac and Cheese, Tacos.
Yeah.
You get three of them, three soft shell tacos plus chips and salsa for $7.
Okay.
So that's an issue. I was hoping that maybe you would try this out. It does.
Well, I didn't try it out yet.
No, you haven't, but there's you've got another hour.
Yeah,
so so that is one of the lunch specials. Of course, you can get a pound of the smoked chicken wings for $7, 2 pounds for $12. You get your choice of sauce and the dipping sauce, blue cheese ranch, as well as you can get Nashville hot sauce, regular buffalo sauce, any of those different sauces on them. So take your pick, and you get a side of fries with each of them as well. That you've got, you can get that anytime. Also,
what else is going on?
Don't forget the Five Star Dive Bar Restaurant of the Week special.
Sweet,
going on right now. It is it's the Comedy Club special. You get two passes to the Comedy Club for $25. It's two for the price of one. And with that, you get, for $25, you get two passes to a comedy show, two buffet dinners, free admission to see the live band that's going to be playing upstairs at Five Star after the comedy show, and also a $10 gift card to use at Five Star. And you can use those any Friday for any Friday comedy show now through March when their comedy season runs, basically September through March. Tonight's Comedy Club features Bill Buschert. The music upstairs is Blammo tonight. Tomorrow night it is Zero. But they've got national acts coming in all the time at the Comedy Club. So it's a pretty cool deal. So for $25, you get all that. Two passes to the show, two buffet dinners. You also get to see the live music if you want, and $10 gift card. So it's a great deal. Just go to restaurantoftheweek.com. That's restaurantoftheweek.com. And you can get your Five Star Dive Bar Comedy Club passes. Sweet
Sounds
deal.
Good. I like it.
Great date night, Friday night.
Yeah.
Come see a comedy club and stay for the music afterwards as well. We've got Notre Dame, Georgia tomorrow.
Oh. Yeah, we sure do.
I feel like everything leading up to now has just been the warm-up act.
It has been the warm-up act.
And that's kind of Ian Book sort of alluded to that earlier in the week. Like, we've all been thinking about this, and now it's here.
I started thinking about that in the summer. I mean,
they were getting questions about it over the summer.
Who's the first team you're going to circle on the schedule if you're a player?
That's absolutely right.
And as much as you'd like to say you don't look ahead to other teams, you do. I mean, there's not a lot of excitement, probably, you know, granted it being the first game, but going to play a team that was 2-10 the year before, and then a team you know you should thrash when you're 30-point favorites. This is an entirely different mentality now, and it really, I mean, it's season defining. It could be program defining. There's a lot on the table on this one.
Absolutely, and we are going to jump into a lot of that coming up here in just a second. First, we'll remind you about our game day schedule tomorrow, 3 o'clock, Brian Kelly Show here on 96.1 WSBT, 4 o'clock, Legacy Heating and Air Game Day Show with Tim Growl and Vince D'Addario. That will be from 4 to 5 o'clock. You've got former Notre Dame and NFL linebacker, now ESPN analyst Rocky Boyman, former Fighting Irish 1988 National Championship linebacker Flash Gordon, the president of the Newt Rockne Memorial Society, Jim LaFave, and also reporting from Sanford Stadium in Georgia, you've got South Bend Tribune columnist Tom Noy, as well as Irish 101's Len Clark. Then at 5 o'clock, it's Budweiser's Game Day Sports Beat with Darren Pritchett, Eric Hansen, and I. We'll take you up till 7 o'clock, the network pregame show. 8 o'clock, Notre Dame-Georgia kickoff. And then at around 11:30 tomorrow night, Reggie Brooks and I with the postgame show for a couple of hours. You had a great idea on Twitter the other day.
I don't have a lot of great ideas.
I thought this was a great one.
But I was sitting there, and I was like, this is a great opportunity for this. You want to let everybody know? I think this is awesome.
Yeah, so Evan, you tweeted this the other day. Broadcast Notre Dame versus Georgia from Notre Dame Stadium. And you're talking about putting it up on the big screen. Free admission. Okay. Charge for food and drink.
Perfect.
And then you, of course, added, I'll take 5% for the idea.
You know, if they end up doing it, I gotta have a finder's fee of some sort.
I mean, they show Rudy in there every year now.
And I think that's kind of what made me think of it was they've been doing some, you know, family movie nights in there. But how cool would it be to go and watch the game, especially a game of this caliber, in the stadium, on the Jumbotron.
Yeah, I think
it'd be awesome.
That'd be a lot of fun.
And the other part of it, too, that kind of got me thinking was they're saying that at Georgia there's going to be 75,000 to 90,000 additional fans that are going to be outside the stadium.
Yeah, they're not going to be able to get in.
And based on how Georgia traveled 2 years ago, I believe it.
No, absolutely.
I believe it.
Absolutely. I mean, there's no way that Notre Dame is going to be able to travel in the same fashion. And there'll be Notre Dame fans down there. I think that, you know, there's going to be the, 8,000 I think we talked about. They've expanded the capacity a little bit. They've added an additional 500 seats, I guess, at the end of the stadium where the scoreboard is. They brought in some of the old, not old, but aluminum bleachers, old style.
Correct.
I guess. And that's to accommodate the extra Notre Dame fans, because when they came here, Notre Dame gave them a big allotment, and they wanted to reciprocate and match the allotment, so they had to bring in a few extra seats to accomplish it. I mean, we've all been looking forward to it, and it's here right now. Before we jump specifically into Notre Dame, Georgia, though, Evan, where did you see the most improvement from the Fighting Irish from game one against Louisville to game two last week against New Mexico?
I mean, it's tough because of who they're playing,
right?
You know, to get a great gauge on that.
And we said that going in, it was going to be tough, really.
Yeah, and that's it's you don't want to throw a game out. They took care of business again, kind of started a little bit slow, which they're not going to be able to do this week. You know, they're going to have to come out and survive that early fury, because if they get behind, I don't think it's going to be great.
Yeah.
So, you know, to say that there was a huge amount of improvement, I liked that they were able to close out the football game. It was nice to see Ian Book, and granted, a couple of his longer completions, and I'll use air quotes on those, were not necessarily throws.
Yeah.
And some guys making some great plays. They were able to execute. You know, they took care of business the way that they were supposed to. So, again, it's really hard for me to look at game one and then game two and say there are some areas where I know that they significantly got better.
It was one of the most lackluster 66 to 14 games, but just because of the slow start,
you know,
I think.
But also, I mean, it's you win by that much, and you're still, whether you're saying upset or you're unsure, that's just kind of the nature of the beast, because if you play terrible for four quarters and you barely win, well, now there's a lot of concern.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, at the very least, there's a little bit of momentum, whether you want to say that's real or not, going into and saying, okay, we did what we were supposed to do. Not that the players look at the spread, but, hey, we were supposed to win by 30-plus points, and we did.
Yeah.
And now we move our focus into the game that we've probably been in the back of our minds thinking about for the last month or more than that.
Exactly. So a double fill-in-the-blank. Well, first I'll start with this. I did think the linebacker play looked better Now, is it? It's. I don't think it's ever going to look like Tavon Coney and Drew Tranquil.
Probably not.
You know, that's the standard that we had, or you know. So I think we've kind of got to get that out of our mind. It did make improvement, and I know that Asmar Bilal missed a tackle, I think, early in the game, and you're kind of going, oh boy, here we go again. But as even the first quarter went on, and as the game went on, you could see him getting off blocks better, not just catching a blocker in his chest and kind of getting washed up. He was flowing to the ball better, fought off blocks better, and ended up leading the Irish with 8 tackles. So I thought that there was improvement with still room to grow as far as the linebackers go. Drew White was solid, but I thought there was at least a step up in terms of the linebackers.
Well, it's a good thing they had 2 games until Georgia. You know, for a lot of these guys, especially at the linebacker position, to grow a little bit. I agree. I thought there were some steps in the right direction. But it's going to be Sean, you know, it's going to be a huge test this week for this linebacker group.
Yep.
They're going to be put in some positions and run-fill situations against some very high-caliber talent on the Georgia side. Georgia has a great offensive line, and, you know, the way they've been running the football, you know, granted the caliber of teams that they've played in the first 2 games, you know, it's not the same as Notre Dame that they'll be going up against this week in Notre Dame's defensive front 7, really the front 4, too, who has the ability to control line of scrimmage. I think that we're going to get a pretty good feel early on where this game goes. And then it's going to come down to who can adjust the quickest on the fly.
Yeah.
Based on whatever scheme or game plan each team puts together to attack the opposing teams.
Let me ask you this now. This is a fill-in-the-blank question. It's a double fill-in-the-blank question, okay? So through Notre Dame's first 2 games, you were most encouraged about blank,
okay,
but you were most concerned about blank. So what are you most encouraged about?
Okay, if I go offense and defense for both?
Yeah, if you want to.
So at least on the encouragement side, I'm probably most encouraged by, or given me the most confidence, has been the play of the Irish wide receivers.
Okay.
I've been very pleased with what they're doing. And moving forward, I think that may continue to grow. And then the Irish secondary. You know, I think that they continue to be a strong point of this team. You know, the safety play, and then also the cornerback position, too. I mean, there's pretty good depth there. There's a number of guys playing. You have some younger kids that are stepping up and doing a great job. So for me, it's going to be the wide receivers and the secondary. And then the area that I'm most concerned, I'll echo again, is still going to be linebacker play on defense.
Yeah.
And then offensively is Notre Dame's ability or lack thereof to run the football when everybody knows they're going to run the football.
And I know Brian Kelly said, well, that they weren't going to let us run it up inside, so we did some other stuff, and that worked. I think that there's still a concern in that statement, just because we're not even talking about Purdue. We're talking about New Mexico,
yeah,
imposing their will inside, and so Notre Dame adjusted. I mean, give them credit. They did adjust. They did some different things. But I think we all just thought with that massive offensive line that Notre Dame should have been able to control the line of scrimmage better when they were on offense, especially in some of those third and short situations. Can you run the ball? Can you get a yard when you need a yard? And unfortunately, through 2 games, we haven't seen that. And that's kind of where my concern lies. So what I'm most encouraged about, and I agree with you, in the secondary, and I mean, it's fun to watch when that dime package is on the field now when Kyle Hamilton is out there.
Somebody brought this question up to me, too, is, well, how about we let you finish? Let's get back to the time. Go ahead and continue telling me what you're most encouraged by.
No, and I mean, Sean Crawford through 2 games has looked great.
Yeah, he's been great.
Hasn't missed a beat, and having him back.
How cool is that to see?
Really? Oh, I know. Yeah. I mean, you're talking about 2 separate ACLs and an Achilles, and now he's battled his way back yet again. And every time he's been healthy, he's been out there making plays. And he has really just solidified that secondary and brought things together with he and Troy Pride playing opposite of each other. And then, of course, the safeties that you've got with both Gilman and Elliott, and then throwing in
Hamilton,
Kyle Hamilton in that dime package, and just his ability, because those other guys can creep a little bit closer, and him just playing back there, playing center field, and relying on his instincts and athletic ability to just go out and make plays.
He looks like a young Sean Stiers out there.
I wish. If I was only almost a foot taller, I could even approach that.
I can't
that.
Believe how tall he is.
I know. That's what's amazing. I agree with the wide receivers. Let me ask you this, though. Chris Fink had to move outside because of the injury to Michael Young.
Mm-hmm.
We saw Javon McKinley be able to move out there, and he and Chase Claypool kind of flip-flopped last week. But Chris Fink has not been the factor that we thought he would be, and the factor that he was last year when he was in the slot. Does McKinley sort of help that a little bit, where you can give a different look now? You can move Fink back into the slot, where I think we would all agree that he can maximize
that's
his
where
potential.
He needs to be.
Yeah.
I mean, plain and simple.
I mean, Keys hasn't been bad, but we just haven't seen the same plays there.
Right. That's where Fink makes his money. He doesn't make money, but that's where he's very good. Okay?
Yeah.
Is winning in the slot, and I think, he probably has a better rapport at this time in that position with Ian Book, kind of knowing where you are.
Yeah.
What has been great to see, though, is the emergence of Javon McKinley, and then obviously the very exceptional talent in a guy like Chase Claypool, too. So, it's not a red flag for me. That's ultimately where you would want Chris Fink to be, is where he's most comfortable, where he's had the most success. So getting him back there, I think, will help balance out and at least see a little more production from him.
So now what were you about to say a second ago when I was talking about the secondary?
Well, somebody brought this point up to me, is in Georgia, they're running the football very efficiently right mm-hmm. now. And there was a stat that someone pointed out to me that I didn't even know was a stat. They are right now, they are averaging 4 yards per carry before being touched.
Wow.
So before contact, they are running 4 yards. Nobody is hitting the running back for 4 yards before they're even getting touched. So in a lot of their packages that they're in, they're not in a lot of or ton exotics. They play, for the most part, some base personnel on the offensive side. Is how do you get to that dime package if they're staying
right
in some two
because
tight
you've
end sets?
Be able to, yeah.
So normally, the defense is going to adjust to what offensive personnel runs onto the field. So, whether you're at the stadium and you're watching it, or they're holding cards up or signaling whatever it is, the offense will sub their players in. And if, they go to a three wide receiver set, then normally you'll counter on defense and you'll sub your guys in. Well, if they're going a lot of two tight or two running back or whatever that may look like, it's going to be a lot of base personnel, which for Notre Dame is going to mean they're not going to be in that dime unless they're able to force Georgia into some third and longs. And to this point this year, that hasn't been the case.
Now, a couple of different things to that. They've played Murray State and Arkansas State.
Correct.
The last week.
Yeah, so not fair comparisons. So,
even Georgia, even though that Notre Dame and everyone around here knows that this is going to be a big step up in competition for Notre Dame, this is also a big step up in competition for
Georgia. But you still have to think that they're probably not going to go off of script with what they've done so far.
Yeah.
If you've had success, they're initially going to line up and say, okay, Notre Dame, here's what we've done for two games. It seems to be working for us. That's our, that's our identity. We're going to try that until it doesn't work.
Well,
Let
me ask you this, because I feel like everything that you said is true, and I hadn't seen that stat either about the 4 yards without even being touched. I mean, that is quite something. But what Notre Dame – and I mean, it's a concern, because Notre Dame is allowing 230 rushing yards. And that's – so when I go back to what I'm concerned about, it's Notre Dame's ability to run the ball. And it surprises me that they're actually averaging 193 rushing yards a game right now after watching New Mexico game last week. They ran for 188, which, again, is still – kind of baffling to me just watching that game, but they're allowing 230 yards. So I guess part of my question is, like, when the Louisville game, they came out and there was some more blitzing. They were really aggressive early on against Louisville, and some of the read option stuff, Notre Dame's pursuit left them out of position to make plays. There were a lot of cutback lanes, and that's where the quarterback was kind of able to make some of his hay early on. So that over-aggressiveness kind of took Notre Dame out of that. New Mexico, a little bit of the same, but not quite the same, just because the athletes weren't quite as good. But there was still some of that, the ability of the quarterback to run the ball. So my question is, Georgia's going to be a lot more straightforward, more of a pro-style offense. So I would expect that Notre Dame is going to have to come out and with a lot of blitz packages to try to do what you're saying to disrupt early on first and second down, get them out of that. So the game plan is going to be a little bit different. It's going to look a little bit different because of the fact that you've got a more, even though you've got better athletes, a better offensive line, better quarterback, better running backs, the whole thing, it's going to be a little bit more straightforward than what they've seen the last couple games.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you show who you are in the first two games, but now that there is probably a little more meaning to this, there's going to be some added wrinkles, and when the talent level increases too, which I think you're touching on, is you're going to have to adjust to that as well. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'll be very intrigued early on to see what Notre Dame does. Do they sit back and play base and, you know, allow their linebackers or their safeties to naturally run fill, or are we going to see some run blitzes early on? I don't know.
I think you've got to.
I don't know.
Because of the fact that there's still questions
The tough part with that, though, is if you get caught in a run blitz, you could easily give up an 80-yard touchdown.
Yeah.
You know, versus we've got a guy in a hole and he misses a tackle, and maybe it's a 30-yard run.
Yeah.
Because the run blitz really, you know, a lot of times, you know, it puts you – it's which most blitzes are – high risk, high reward. You know, if you bring a free rusher on a passing down, it means that someone's probably in one-on-one coverage somewhere. So if they make a guy miss, it could go to the house. So I don't know. You know, you also could have the discussion of, and I don't know where the Notre Dame coaches, the coaching staff, the defensive side sits on this, is you're going into enemy territory. Do you try to, you know, match intensity for intensity and say, all right, guys, we're going to bring, you know, the whole kitchen sink at them early on and see what they've got, and then they're going to have to adjust to that. That may be part of the game plan. That's what's, you know, that's what's fun about being a football coach and then us sitting here and talking about it is, you know, you get to kind of decide that as the coach, the coaching staff, and then we get to analyze and say, well, hey, they might go with plan A. Hey, they might go with plan B or C. We don't really know. So that's why for me, you know, it's always really fun, especially in these big time matchups in prime time, to watch the first 5 minutes, because you get a really good feel for, ooh, that's what they're going to try to do this whole game. And, ooh, it's not working. Okay, how are they going to adjust, or when are they going to adjust?
Well, and the other thing is, because of the fact that the personnel that Georgia uses, if they're playing their game, we're going to see a lot more Asmar Bilal and Drew White. We're not going to necessarily see some of the other personnel. And I think they're probably at the point right now where they sort of needed – they need to narrow down that rotation a little bit. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be, you know, I still think it's going to be an all hands on deck, and it's been kind of a whoever gets hot, they continue going to, and it may be one of those things. So, you know, we can sit here and talk about a number of different things, but Sean, you know, being around football as long as you have and myself playing it and being around it now too, is it's going to come down to who controls the line of scrimmage.
Yeah,
it really is.
So let's stick with that here for just a second. What is the bigger concern then Saturday for Notre Dame? Their ability to run the ball or their ability to stop the run?
That's not a fair question. It's both.
Well, and those were Brian Kelly's keys coming into the season, and I think maybe he probably saw some things that the media didn't always get to see when we were watching some of those fall camp practices, because I'll say that it's looked a lot different now than most of us thought it was going to look.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I'm going to go with, because I know you're going to make me pick. I'm going to say I'm more confident right now in Mike Elston's defensive line.
Okay.
And their ability to at least slow down this Georgia rushing attack. And we'll say potentially how Clark Lee wants to scheme some different pressures, whether or not it might be from the safety position. It may not be from the linebacker position. Trying to get Elohi Gilman and Jalen Elliott a little more involved in run stopping. And that is solely based on, I think, our previous conversation on, so far, Notre Dame's inability to run the football in downs where the whole stadium knows, but they still should be able to pick up 2 yards.
I'm really interested to see some of the different looks Clark Lea gives Georgia, because he's going to have to mix it up compared to what we've seen so far. Dalen Hayes has been outstanding so far through two games. Had a great game last week, had a good game against Louisville. Julian Aquara is still looking for that sack. I mean, Hayes is a guy who played linebacker in high school, and I remember last year there were a couple packages where you would see Dalen Hayes actually playing at linebacker.
Yep.
So you know, my question, do you think maybe we see Aquara, Hayes, and Khalid Kareem on the field at the same time sometimes tomorrow night?
I mean, I threw out at the beginning of the year, put Hamilton at linebacker or Gilman at linebacker. I mean, I don't think anything is off the table on this as far as different looks. And if you're gonna move to some type of exotics, you know, if a team hasn't prepared for it, you're forcing their hand then very early on, maybe a three and out or two for them to adjust and say, all right, we got to draw something up on a board here and figure out what we're going to do.
I mean, moving Gilman up makes sense too, because you have some trust in Kyle Hamilton now.
Right.
You know, they're just what we've seen. So, I mean, if you had him and Elliott back there and you had Gilman playing up, I mean, that's not the worst look in the world. I just think that there's going to be some different looks that Clark Lea is going to throw at him tomorrow night.
I agree. I think they have to, you know. You're gonna have to, if you're not forcing turnovers, you're gonna have to get some three and outs in this game.
I mean, the bottom line is Georgia goes into the game ranked eighth in the country in rushing offense. They're averaging 286 yards a game, 7.1 yards per carry with 11 rushing touchdowns. While Notre Dame's rush defense ranks 120th in the country, giving up 230 yards per game. One other caveat though that I look at New Mexico. Last week, they ran the ball 46 times. They threw the ball 29 times in a game that they lost 66-14. I mean, kind of like pitching to the scoreboard. Don't you agree that it's like they just kind of stuck with their thing? We're just going to keep running the ball. And if you're Notre Dame, I mean, you're going to take that, right? So, I mean, the final number looks concerning, 230, but you won the game 66-14. And again, if they're going to just keep running the ball, you're fully fine with them running the ball. So statistically, it might not look great, but the outcome was still what you were looking for.
It's like hitting instructors telling kids to swing down and hit ground balls when pitchers are taught to keep it low in the zone.
That's right.
And force ground balls.
That's right. All right. We've got more coming up. We'll hear from ESPN's Kirk Herbstreit. He was on Golic and Wingo yesterday. You'll hear some of that. Also, a Johnny Manziel comparison with Ian Book came up this week from Georgia.
Okay.
We'll touch on that and a whole lot more still to come at Five Star Dive Bar in downtown Elkhart in the former State Theater. Sean and Sharpley and the Leprechaun Lunch, 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. Wow. Sean and Sharpley and the Leprechaun Lunch, 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. Notre Dame, Georgia coming up 8 o'clock tomorrow night. Of course, you'll hear it right here on 96.1 WSBT. And our pregame coverage, or our game day coverage rather, starts at 3 o'clock with the Brian Kelly Show and rolls on through the day. Did you see on Twitter last night the Notre Dame equipment truck on its way to Athens?
Yeah.
Broken down by the side of the road. And
sure
some
was.
People
they thought it was a bad omen.
As a bad omen. That's right.
Yeah, they did.
Where are you on curses and jinxes, Evan?
They don't sit highly in my brain.
So you were never really a superstitious kind of guy.
Well, yeah, just the Babe Ruth superstition, just touch all the four bases when you hit a home run.
There you go.
Keep it simple. I had routines and little rituals.
Yeah.
But I didn't believe it to the point where I was like, man, if I didn't do that, then for sure it wasn't going to happen.
Yeah.
But I think any sports team, you have little, especially longer seasons, you get into, okay, this is what I do when I walk in the locker room. It's just kind of – then you get into autopilot where you're not having to think a whole lot.
Right.
Until you actually have to think a whole lot.
All right. So Kirk Herbstreit, the ESPN analyst, was on Golic and Wingo yesterday on WSBT. They talked about Notre Dame's chances at Georgia Saturday, and here is what Kirk Herbstreit had to say.
When Notre Dame gets into these kind of games, I just wonder, are they a guy or two short at the skill players? Like, they don't have the 6'3", the 6'4" guy that runs a 4.3. Like that guy that a lot of the top five, top seven teams have. Claypool could be that guy. This would be a great weekend for him to be that guy. But I just feel that they're going to have to play a perfect game on both sides of the ball to be able to get out of there with a win.
All right, Evan, so do you buy or sell what Kirk Herbstreit is saying?
What part do you want me to buy or sell?
You can break it down in two parts because there are two things there. The skill position stuff first, I guess.
You know, I think if you look across the board and you're comparing Notre Dame, you know, one team, an independent, probably to the entire SEC, and I don't know if that is in of itself is fair.
Yeah.
You know, if you look at year in and year out, guys that go to the combine and the number of draft picks that LSU puts out and Auburn puts out and Alabama and Georgia, sure, you know, in pure volume, you're going to have guys that are probably per position in the top five every year from one of those schools. You know, so I don't know if that comparison is necessarily fair. Notre Dame, they have guys that are fast, and I think player development and also recruiting too has improved over the last 10 years where they're getting more of those game-changing type of speed guys.
Right.
But it's still, you know, it still can be hit or miss. It's not every year we're talking about a guy like Will Fuller. You know, we probably have since Will Fuller has left is who's going to be the next Will Fuller.
Right. And that's
and
I mean,
before that, it was, you know, maybe it was Golden Tate. You know, who's going to be the next Golden Tate where when I'm even, I'm leaving. You know, I mean, that was his saying. And as a freshman, he didn't know any of the playbook, but he was on the field because he could run by everybody.
Yeah.
So, you know, and those are special players.
Why am I not surprised?
You probably see an overall volume more of those at most SEC schools. And even now, if you look at the most elite programs, I mean, there's a number of those players at Ohio State and Clemson, too. That's the reason why they're very good.
Yeah.
To his point about a guy or two short, I hear that more about a depth question. And that may have some merit to and if you look at the teams that have won the past couple years, their twos and threes might be in the starting mix at a school that is – I mean, it's been Alabama and Clemson and everybody else. So if you're comparing, say, those schools and their depth, yeah, it's an embarrassment of riches because their third-string guy might walk into, let's say, Michigan or Notre Dame and be a starter.
You know, but at the same time, I think everyone was really surprised when Miles Boykin went to the combine
100%.
And put up the time. What did he end up?
I don't remember, but it was.
Yeah, but I mean, it was a lot faster than anyone.
Nobody thought that was going to be the case.
Right, so it's not that it's not necessarily there, but maybe we just don't see it sometimes. But they have addressed it in recruiting, and the last few recruiting classes, they've gained a ton of momentum. There's going to be, you know, there's a couple skill guys, a running back and a receiver coming next year that are going to continue to add to that. But Brian Kelly did say when he was asked about Avery Davis and the big shovel pass play that he made that he took to the house. He ran 23 miles an hour on that play. And he said, we haven't seen that since Will Fuller.
Which is faster than a bear at top speed.
Yeah. So, this is season four since Will Fuller.
Right.
You know, so yeah, there has been some of that lacking, but they are gaining momentum. They're getting some of that. I mean, it goes without saying. I mean, like if you look at the running back position right now, that was our concern coming into this season was how is that going to look without the breakaway speed of Dexter Williams? And then when you lose Jafar Armstrong right away, it got even worse.
I can see it probably at that whole position group, at least guys that are playing consistently. Good group, solid group, but it's not a guy like Dexter or Jafar or like most SEC and Clemson teams.
Yeah. Well, and definitely not like Georgia because they've got a ton of depth at that running and speed.
They just keep churning those guys out.
They do.
It's nuts.
They do. But, I mean, it is worth noting that Sony Michel and Chubb a couple of years ago ended up with, like, one of them had 1,400 yards, I think. The other had 11 or 1,200 yards. But neither one of them touched 100 yards against Notre Dame that day.
Yeah, well, that's true.
So, again, there's more concerns, I think, up front in this particular game, but they did put together a game plan that limited that vaunted running attack that day. So, again, it's part of why I'm
– and I think the reason why, if we're going to backtrack to that, I mean, it was Fromm's first game as a starter. the Georgia quarterback. Yeah. So
a lot more under his belt.
I'm assuming they were saying we're going to load this box and we're going to say these two running backs are not going to beat us. It's going to be, I think, a little bit different now because you got a multi-year starter at quarterback who probably has a better feel of the offense and what he's able to do and some guys around him. So, yes, I mean, if you take the running game out of it, it does. It makes you very one-dimensional, and you're able to call coverages, and it's much more simple. So I still like that type of attack. Don't get beat on the ground. Don't get beat there.
But Fromm has only lost two regular season games in his career, one each year, LSU last year, Auburn the year before that. And the common connection in those games he was sacked four times in each of those games. And combined, he had two interceptions in one game, one interception in the other. And this is a guy who doesn't turn the ball over. So sacks, turnovers came when you get pressure on him, and that is essentially the key, figuring out a way to get to Jake Fromm. Mm-hmm. Part of what protects him is that running game, though.
Yeah, stop the run, pressure the quarterback.
Yeah.
Sounds like a good recipe. A lot harder to do, though.
Can you get it done? That is still the question. But also, even though Notre Dame doesn't have a ton of sacks through the first couple games, part of it goes to the kind of offenses they're playing. Get the ball out quick.
And Louisville did that. They did a great job of getting it out quick.
They did, and so did New Mexico at times, even if they were incompletions. But they got it out quick. They negated some sacks. There were still some hurries, and it's turned into turnovers. That dime package, though, get to the dime package is the big thing because quarterbacks have been the first two quarterbacks, four quarterbacks, I guess, when you factor in the guys who have come in. They have not completed it well, and most of the turnovers have come. Case in point, Kyle Hamilton with his pick six when that dime package is on the field. But it's getting to that. That's the biggest challenge, I think, for the Irish. Okay, so let's go to Ian Book.
Okay.
Georgia safety J.R. Reed said this week that Book reminds him of Johnny Manziel in the way he runs and extends plays. So what do you think of that comparison?
I'm okay with it. I think the slipperiness is similar. I don't think that Ian Book does it maybe with as much flair or as eccentric, where he's not always, running with
running gun,
one hand on the ball or flipping and reversing field.
Uh-huh.
So maybe you're saying he's not as dynamic in that mode, but he has a great feel for, being able to move in the pocket, sometimes maybe too soon, but he has that clock in his head that it's okay, it's time to get out of dodge. But even on plays where it's maybe, a null play where they're not losing any yards and he's able to throw it away or pick up a couple, he does a good job of protecting himself, number one, and then extending plays and turning something that potentially negative into a positive.
I feel like the Georgia game plan, like they're really building up and reinforcing with their defense. You can't forget about
Ian
Book as a runner.
Mm-mm.
Because through Notre Dame's first two games, he and Tony Jones Jr. are tied for the team lead with 127 rushing yards. Book led the Irish in rushing against New Mexico. So I think they're maybe overplaying it a little bit, but at the same time, they're building up. This guy can hurt you as a runner. Don't forget about him back there.
Well, I think that they should be alerting their guys to that because you normally go and do, if you go into a game plan right now against Notre Dame and Ian Book, that's probably not the number one thing you say.
Yeah.
But I think it's smart to alert your team too because he does have the ability to hurt you when it's that opportunity is presented, and he has a high enough football IQ to recognize when those opportunities are.
Any quarterbacks, past or present, that Book reminds you of?
I kind of like morphed two guys together. It was kind of like maybe like a Drew Brees and Baker Mayfield kind of mix.
Huh.
Brees is really a pure passer, and I think that Ian is. I think, Ian's probably 3 or 4 years old throwing spirals, when
right.
he was a little kid. He just kind of has that. When you play catch with him, there's not a lot of teaching. You play – if you're a quarterback coach or an instructor, you play catch with him, you're like, just whatever you do, just keep doing that. That's good, Good spiral,
Right.
Keep – pat him on the back.
So. Attaboy.
And then, Mayfield's ability, I think, to extend some plays.
Yeah.
And so I kind of had those two guys, and both really, and Ian Book too, don't fit your traditional molds, I think, as far as what you would look at as a, you know, a prototypical next level NFL quarterback, where the average size is, I think, 6'4". You know, you're looking at three guys that are very good at distributing the football and getting their guys involved, but maybe don't fit that build where they're closer to, you know, the 6'2" range.
I kept trying to think, and I've still. The closest comparison I can come up with, and it seems too simple, is Montana.
Mm-hmm.
Just because they're about the same size. Montana is like an inch and a half, 2 inches taller, something like that. They're both just right around 200 pounds, you know, not real big and bulky or tall or anything like that. Neither one of them has a rocket arm, but they're, as you just said, they're very accurate. They both throw a good ball, and both, while they can run, they're not necessarily known
right.
for the running, like a Manziel or some of those mm-hmm. other guys that you talked about. Breeze, I never really thought about him, but, I mean, he obviously probably has a stronger arm too. But,
But he does, you know,
I think he fits
from,
in there because he's not a big guy.
Yeah, but he does it from in and out of the pocket too, you know.
Yeah.
And, well, he's done now for a while. But, you know, he's always been really good too at, you know, maybe pushing the pocket 8 yards and making some throws on the run and,
yeah.
and hitting guys. But he's been accurate forever, too.
What do you think about Book? How do you evaluate him after two games?
Well, again, game two is so hard for me. I almost throw it out. I mean, really. So, you know, my thoughts on game one, and Brian Kelly and Ian Book talked about this, was just ejecting out of the pocket too soon. You know, he's got to be able to stand in there, make some subtle moves, even when protection is, it doesn't feel like it's okay. It is. And a lot of that is trust and reliance on the offensive line, and then distributing the football to a talented group of receivers that he has. So, you know, it was progress in game two. I'm not going to completely throw it out. You know, it was a good step. It was a good boost of confidence for him. So, but this is going to be, you know, this is going to be a different animal. You know, let's think back to Clemson a year ago. We may put it in that realm of, hey, here's another opportunity. Are you going to rise to the challenge now? Because this offense, I think, is going to, in these types of games, is really going to live and die and breathe with Ian Book.
Well, and some of it goes back to the things Herb Street was saying as well. You know, in these big-time matchups that they don't tend to have the talent for talent stack up of some of these
You got to have someone
programs.
Play special. You're going to have to.
Yep. Someone's got to play above their head to some extent. All right, we'll take a timeout when we come back. Should Notre Dame be a double-digit underdog, a 14.5-point underdog in tomorrow's game? That has gone up as the week has gone on. Now, part of that, obviously, is
who's laying the monies?
Yes, that's exactly right. So we'll do that and some more. We've got a lot of we'll probably have to go a little bit rapid-fire as we get through some of this when we continue and wrap things up. Leprechaun Lunch, five-star dive bar, 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. Wind it things down. Leprechaun Lunch, Sean and Sharpley on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. I think we've just discovered a separated at birth thing going on here. Her little older brother, anyway. Keith Kinder and Eminem. I mean, Google
well,
it.
The real Slim Shady, please
right.
stand up, baby.
Take away that Kinder goatee, man. And I mean,
yeah, look at that.
Mishawaka and New Prairie coming up tonight. It's homecoming at Mishawaka, 7:30 kickoff tonight here on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader.
Is there a registered record for the shortest football game ever recorded? Because you have two running football teams.
Could be it. Could
well,
be
the,
it.
Well, the homecoming festivities may make it longer, though.
Mishawaka has a longer halftime anyway. They go 20 minutes, so I don't know if they'll be even longer
even
because of homecoming or if that'll, you know, how that's going to work. But, okay, let's start with we've got a lot of different topics to get through before the show is over, Mr. Sharpley.
Okay. We can do it.
Should Notre Dame be, they're a 14.5-point underdog tomorrow. Should they be a double-digit underdog?
Man. I thought the opening 12.5 was good. 14.5 is, I don't know. I'm gonna say the under on that. I think it's high.
Do you think they
two touchdown? I was okay with.
Notre Dame is just 4-20 as a double-digit underdog over the past 20 years.
Not great.
No,
it's not great.
What do you,
So you're asking if you think I can, if they can win?
Can they
or
at least
cover?
Be within single digits?
When I kind of worked through this, I said if they were going to win, I thought they were going to win by three.
Okay.
And if they lost, I was in that 10-13 range.
Okay.
I don't think. I mean, I was wrong last week about the under, too. I didn't think they were going to put up 66 points.
I think there have been enough concerns that we've seen on each side of the ball that really makes us wonder what's going to happen tomorrow.
I'll be around 10 if they lose. How about that?
Yeah, okay. I could see that.
Touchdown and a field goal.
I still say, you know, Georgia's good, but Murray State and Arkansas State are not what they're going to see tomorrow night.
You only got to be better than this team on one day.
That's right. That's exactly it, Lou Holtz.
It just needs to be tomorrow.
Would a Notre Dame win at Georgia tomorrow be bigger than their 2012 win at Oklahoma?
You know, I'm going to go yes on this one. I think just with right now, given that Notre Dame has been to a national championship and gotten destroyed, been in the college football playoffs and gotten destroyed, I think the stakes right now nationally, and I know Brian Kelly and the team, they don't care about that, but maybe within the fan base and the national perception is it's kind of put up or shut up right now.
Uh-huh.
You haven't won a road game against a top five team in a long time. This is a huge opportunity to go and silence a lot of critics. And now if you look at the way the rest of the schedule plays out, you win this game, you legitimately have a chance to have another special regular season.
Yeah. Exactly. And I mean, you're talking about a team that's competing for national championships, that they're playing at home in that environment. I agree with it as well. As big as that win at Oklahoma was, which essentially launched them, it springboarded them to the BCS championship game, I think this, just with all the perceptual stuff and how much they're built up, I think that this would be bigger as well. Do you think being a road underdog works in their favor?
I love it.
I mean,
you got nothing to lose.
Yeah.
Everybody thinks you're going to lose by 14.5 points. Probably members within your own fan base think you're going to lose by that same number of points. So, and honestly, as a player, I think the players have got to dig this. There's going to be 160,000 fans around campus. Oh, I love it. You know, sign me up for that type of experience.
Yeah, big time environment. Do you buy or sell this as a must-win if the Irish are going to get in the playoff again this
100%.
year? 100%. Yeah, I agree.
They will not be a one-loss team and get in. There is no chance.
The only exception would be if it's a game similar to when Georgia was here a couple years ago.
I still say no. Even if it's close and Georgia wins out, I still say no.
Okay.
I think based on the committee's not doing it again.
Okay. I can see that, too. I can see that easily. Notre Dame's held 16 straight opponents under 30 points. Scale of 1 to 10. How confident are you that they can do that tomorrow?
6 or 7.
I'm at a 7.
Yeah.
I'm fairly confident that Georgia's not going to score under 20, but I'm fairly confident at a 7 that they can keep them under 30 points.
I'm with you there, too, Sean.
Because I think of the ground control, unless there are just massive, huge chunk plays in the run game, which could happen.
If they hit on a couple of explosives, then that may change. But I'm with you. You know, this defense has done a good job of adjusting and then playing well for multiple quarters, getting off the field on third down, and possibly creating a turnover, which I think in this game, you know, let's count on one of those.
I want to get to the fast four questions that we have every week specific to the game. And then if we have time, I've got a couple others that I'll get to you. Will Ian Book lead Notre Dame in rushing tomorrow night?
I hope not.
He did against New Mexico.
I know he did.
And he's tied for the team lead right now with 127.
Okay. Let's say yes.
So Evan's going to say yes. I'm still on the fence on this one.
Okay.
I'm... There are things to be seen from both Avery Davis and from Kyren Williams.
Yep.
That's what I'm wondering about tomorrow night.
Well, you also have to take into consideration if you just do a little shovel pass, it's not rushing yards.
That's exactly right, too. And that's what looked like a run.
I'd be like, hey, Chip, do you think you could call a few more of those to pad my passing stats?
Do you think we see some tricks up their sleeve tomorrow?
You'll have a couple in there.
Yeah.
Depending on how
great
the game
design
goes.
On those plays. Yeah. I'm surprised they showed it both ways, though, really.
Yeah.
I don't know if it matters.
No, it probably doesn't, because you'll scheme it up different. Sudden change, maybe.
Yeah.
Momentum switch. Brian Kelly will probably have a good feel for that on where the crowd is at the time.
Over under 230 rushing yards for Georgia.
under.
Notre Dame is...
It's going to be close to that. That's a good number, 230.
Yeah, Notre Dame is allowing right at 230. So Evan,
no, I'm going to say over. Change it.
Evan is going over.
I'm going to say over. That doesn't mean that they're necessarily going to score a bunch.
Yeah. I'm going to go under.
Okay.
I'll say under this one.
Going over on that one.
Notre Dame's a double-digit underdog. Will the game be decided by at least single digits?
No.
Evan says no.
Ten's my cutoff right now.
Yeah, unfortunately. Again, I'm on the fence on this one. I'll wait.
But go
until,
Irish.
I'll wait until Budweiser's Game Day Sports Beat tomorrow
that's
night.
Smart.
You got about 40 seconds.
I should have just said pass on that.
Yeah, that's right. Over under 1.5 sacks by the Irish defense.
I'll go two. Yeah, I'll go two there.
Yeah, I'm two. I think we both say they will be over tomorrow.
If Notre Dame wins, it's 23-20. That's my prediction.
Yep. That's right. Okay, so don't forget, Brian Kelly Show, 3 o'clock tomorrow, Legacy Heating and Air Game Day Show, Tim Grau, Vince D'Addario at 4. At 5 o'clock, Budweiser's Game Day Sports Beat, 7 o'clock, Network Pregame, 8 o'clock kickoff, 11:30-ish, postgame show with Reggie Brooks and I. Good stuff as always. I'm anxious to see if you come back with a mustache next week. For Evan Sharpley, Garrett Kazer in the studio, Sean Steyer's WSBT South Bend.